I'm Faith Middleton. It's great to have you joining the party on the Food Schmooze here on WNPR in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the east end of Long Island. My food buddies are here. Chris Brassberry, senior contributor of Metro Beast Restaurant in Simsbury, Connecticut. Mark Raymond is here from Frederick Wildman & Sons Distributors, one of our wine guys. We have a cocktail man and wine man, Alex Province of Hartford, our producers, Jonathan McNichol and Lori Mack. Welcome to the show, everybody.
Hey there. Good to be here.
And you can tell your friends, no matter where they live, they can listen to the Food Schmooze from anywhere in the world, as many people do, at WNPR.org. Or you can just go to foodschmooze.org. Anything we talk about on this show will be up at our website. It's there right now, foodschmooze.org. And the first thing I'm going to start with is explain to all of you about my eating adventure in New York City. I went to a place that I had seen reviewed not long ago in New York Magazine and in the New York Times, and I thought, this sounds great. And it is called Rotisserie Georgette. And it's on East 60th Street between Madison and 5th. Nice looking place. You see people dressed in, you know, everything from wonderful dresses and suits to jeans and shirts. And so it has that kind of bistro feel, South of France feel, where you can just wear anything. It's lovely, lovely atmosphere in this place. So, of course, I had read that the rotisserie things that the chef and Georgette Farkas were preparing, Danielle Balut is a partner in this restaurant, by the way, that they were really doing some amazing things here. So I thought, let me try this. And I started asking around. So what I'm about to say to you is, I have eaten roast chicken in France. I have eaten roast chicken all over the United States. It is always the mark of a good restaurant. Arguably, this is the finest rotisserie chicken I have ever eaten in my life.
Wow, and that says a lot.
And here's a funny thing. And, you know, that includes, crazily enough, talk about pressure. I had chicken at Ducasse in Monaco. I had a lot of chicken. And he doesn't mean chicken. Really, this is fabulous, fabulous roast chicken. But here's the funny thing about this. I'm with a bunch of people, Gordon Edelstein from Longworth Theater, the artistic director, and a whole bunch of people. And we're there. And we're trying some things. And I had heard that the aged steak that they have here is particularly good. And I thought, you know, okay, rotisserie chicken. I have this all the time. I'm going to try something different. And
skip
I heard the duck is good. I heard the rabbit is good. In duck a l'orange. And I'm thinking, So we ordered a platter of chicken, the roast chicken. We did the platter of the cote de boeuf, the beef. We did the duck. Then we did the roasted potatoes and the roasted mushrooms, and we tried a bunch of different things. And so I started with the beef. Oh, delicious. Then I tried the duck. Oh, delicious. I'm happy. And then I thought, let me just try the chicken. I was so crazy. I mean, the whole table ate it at the same
time.
The whole table went, oh, my God, what in the world is this? So we've got on the show... from Rotisserie Georgette, the prime mover there, Georgette Farkas. So welcome to the show.
Thank you so very much for including me here, but above all for humbling us with your visit to the rotisserie, where I think what people are really embracing is we're actually doing very simple cooking. But as you know, it's not so simple to do simple well every day. What one of my great restaurant mentors taught me is the hardest thing and the most important thing is that consistency. So I don't know, people have been roasting meats and poultry and vegetables over open flames probably for thousands of years. So we haven't reinvented anything. We're just trying to do it very, very well and starting with really good stuff. And that simplicity, as I said, I think it's what people are really embracing. I think before they even get here, if you close your eyes, you know why you're coming. You can taste that nice big roasted cote de boeuf. You can see the birds in your mind's eye. You can close your eyes and see it. You can imagine that duck with a bitter orange glaze. So it's the kind of food you can already start to dream about, but also food you could just have every day, really.
Do you see why I love to talk to this woman about food?
Oh, absolutely.
It's just unbelievable. So, Georgette, here's what I want to know. You can get all kinds of chicken. I eat a ton of chicken. I eat it often during the week. I pay attention to who, which manufacturers I'm getting my chicken from. And I don't go too crazy. So what are they eating, these chickens that you're serving? I mean, I know it is the technique of the roasting. You have those gorgeous French rotisserie machines back there in the kitchen. Thank you for my tour, by the way.
So we are what we eat, and we are how we're raised. And several months before I opened the restaurant, you know, just around when we started the construction, one of the things I did was to go and visit the poultry farm that, one of the principal poultry farms I thought we would be using. We're still, you know, trying various sources, and I think we'll never stop researching and trying. But I thought, well, I don't need to know these chickens by first name, but I really do want to know the farmer by first name if I'm going to be roasting this many birds. So a dear friend and purveyor, Ariane Daguin, she owns, you all probably know her company, D'Artagnan. She took me out to meet a poultry farmer out in Ephrata, Pennsylvania. His name is Leon Zimmerman. You won't see his name on the farm. It's not a big industrial thing. It's just a farm with a bunch of big chicken houses. So, you know, don't go looking for the Leon Zimmerman sign. But in any event, it's in the Lancaster area. And these are birds based on a French breed of bird, but hatched and raised here in the U.S. Although I understand, we've met the people from the hatchery as well. And the what they call the grandparent stock actually comes from France. But in any event, we did want to see how they're raised. You know, for us, we're important quality criteria, given our focus on roasting birds, even though we roast a whole bunch of other stuff. So, of course, they have an all-vegetable, an all-natural all-vegetable feed. That's an important point. They're raised in a little over 2 times the time it takes, you know, to raise sort of industrial birds that you all, you know, that people buy in the supermarket. I think that's why, one of the many reasons it doesn't taste anything like a, what I call a grocery store bird. When a bird is raised in this, you know, double the amount of time, it has the time to develop the flavor and texture of what we think of as real chicken. So an all-natural, all-vegetable feed, the amount of time and care that's taken in raising these birds, of course, they're, you know, free-range and all that sort of thing, although we realized in visiting the chicken houses that they actually don't move around all that much. They kind of like to stay in the warm part of the chicken house. But, you know, they're not out there.
They're home bodies.
In the yard. Yeah.
They can go out if they want.
They can, of course. It's, exactly. That's what free range means, so they're free to go if they choose. Yeah. And then another important quality criteria for us is we wanted to have birds that are what's called air-chilled, and this is probably too much technical information, but, you know, it's important when you're processing the bird, well, to be real about it, when you're slaughtering the bird, you know, you have to get it down to a refrigeration temperature so that it remains fresh and hygienic. And most birds that you buy in the supermarket, you know, when you buy a bird that's been cryovac and you open up the plastic and all that stuff sort of spills out, well, most birds get water chilled, meaning dunked in a liquid bath to chill them, you know, ice liquid bath to chill them down. So these birds instead are air chilled, so they're chilled by air, which means that skin doesn't get waterlogged, and then they're not packed in that same watery goo, you know, that you see when you open up that supermarket bird. So that air chilling was another important distinction for us. And then we actually air chill the birds an additional 2 days in our own walk-ins here in the restaurant.
These chickens are also enrolled in the Luminosity Brain Program, Brain Improvement Program, right?
No, better eating through chickens.
And serenade them with violence. No, it gets expressed in all the extents that people go to with their food. But we're pretty proud of the quality criteria.
I would say so. And I think I forgot to say one of the most important things, which was that foie gras was involved in my chicken. So how are you using the foie gras with the chicken, the roast chicken?
Liberally.
It was bathed in it.
Mixing. You know, what we do here is very traditional, but I have no shame in adding a little bit of luxury, and I think that's what sets us apart, is that we do very traditional cooking, but we don't mind adding that little bit of luxury. In the wintertime, in the winter season, we'll do truffles. So we have a version of our roast chicken. We have one version that's just very simply roasted with herbe de Provence and served with a wonderful natural jus, but we have what we call our poule de luxe, and for my French-speaking friends, they know that that's a little bit of an inside joke, because poule de luxe basically means a high class, you know what. But in any event, our poule de luxe is served with a wild mushroom stuffing under the breast. So we stuff that just in the kind of pocket that we make between the meat of the breast and the skin covering the breast. And then we serve it with some slices of seared foie gras on top. So if you prefer not to have the foie gras, it's fine. It's just sort of sitting nicely roasted.
It's
so, you know,
foie gras
is a bit crisp. Wow. Rich on the inside and crisp on the outside. So it just sits atop the breast, how appropriate, for a poule de luxe.
Amazing.
So that's the version that you had.
How long do they roast for?
Our birds are about 2¾ to 3 pounds. You know, if they're not industrial, they're not perfectly calibrated. These are, you know, birds raised by people. But actually, they roast quite quickly, about 35 to 40 minutes. Those rotisserie ovens are amazingly hot, as our chef Chad Browse will attest to. On summer nights, when I will walk into the kitchen and join him by the rotisserie, I just sort of wonder really how they have my undying admiration for their stamina at working the rotisserie ovens here.
It was hot when I was
when
in there. And, but it's
it.
So gorgeous.
I'm
it's
sure
like it's... a gorgeous piece of furniture, really. So here's one thing I'd like to know. We're talking with Georgette Farkas, who has a restaurant, Rotisserie Georgette, and it is on East 60th Street between Madison and 5th in New York. It has become very, very popular. And I had read a couple of reviews that were singing its praises and went in to try many things. They are also doing whole fish on the rotisserie, which is a pretty amazing thing.
Oh, some people are so surprised by that. And it's actually, people find that it's one of the best things on the menu. They come expecting that we just roast chickens, but we've always got lots of roasted vegetables and cut the beautiful big steaks on the bone. We have a number of cuts of lamb that we do. We always have a whole roast fish. So it's not just about the birds, it's about the rotisserie itself and all the things we can do on the rotisserie.
What in the world did you do to the potatoes? Potatoes were so amazing.
Well, that's a bit evil, and I don't mind admitting. As I say, we don't mind being a bit decadent here. No apologies for decadence. We just in the old-fashioned way that you would find sort of, you know, with a French uh-huh. French market town, everyone has their butcher shop rotisserie place. We roast the potatoes in the juices of the roasting birds. So there's a tray of potatoes in the rotisserie oven sitting right beneath the birds, and the juices can drip down. And how bad is that? It's, you know, it's, as I say, this is an age-old way of cooking. We haven't reinvented it. We're just doing it, you know, well, and we hope deliciously.
Oh, unbelievable. Really unbelievable. And by the way, I know you do these whole roasts, and people can reserve in advance. If you say you have 4 or 8 people, and they'll do a whole suckling pig with a sausage stuffing, a whole Hudson Valley spring lamb with rosemary and garlic, a whole Jameson Farm leg of lamb with a Niçoise olive stuffing, whole rabbit with morel, fava, and pancetta stuffing.
Oh my God.
All of those sound so good to me. Well, you know, the second you make, you know, clear away some space and I can have a condo upstairs, I'll be very, very happy. I just want to put you on notice about that.
I've got a little guest room uptown on the Upper East Side, so anytime.
Georgette, thank you so, so much. And
including me, and I send you all regards from our chef, Chad Browse, who looks forward to cooking for all of you.
Yes, he is quite amazing.
See you
He's
tonight.
Really quite.
He's already getting his train ticket.
There's always a table.
Thank you so much. Georgette Farkas from Rotisserie Georgette in New York City, arguably the best rotisserie roast chicken I've ever had in my life. It was unbelievable with foie gras.
I want to go now.
Oh, isn't that amazing?
Do we have to finish the show?
You know, let me say also.
My car's running.
I should say, you know, just so people are prepared, this is New York, and so the roasted half chicken is $24 a person with your choice of 4 different sauces. And then the poule de luxe for 2 people is $36 per person. That's the one with the wild mushroom stuffed breast and the seared foie gras. That's 36 per person.
Oh, 36 per person.
That's still not bad if you think about foie gras and wild mushrooms draped over the top.
Yeah, and so people are starting to use this place as a club, as I saw when I was in there. I mean, it was just amazing.
That doesn't seem outrageous for New York.
No, but then you have sides.
Yeah.
So,
potatoes.
But nice sides. Broccoli rabe with sauce romesco, roasted trumpet royal mushrooms, with a basil pesto. Unbelievable. $9. Warm baby red beets and red onion vinaigrette with blue cheese, 11, fava beans, onions, crispy pancetta, 12, crispy pencil asparagus with hollandaise, 11, and these potatoes, rotisserie potatoes, 8, the stuffed and crisped Idaho filled with Parmesan mashed potatoes.
Oh. I just want the potatoes and the chicken.
Chicken,
fat.
That's
so
what I want.
So, you know, it does add up, but it is so worth it. It's really incredible.
Yeah.
On the other side of this break, we're going to do a watermelon lime cocktail for you. This is something created by Alex Province. And then we're going to tell you about a great Prosecco. So the sparkling wine from Italy to serve. And we might just blend it a little bit with a cocktail. We're going to see. Lots of things coming away. Plus a tuna salad that I just made up on the fly thanks to a tip from a friend of mine. My dear friend Ita. So I'm Faith Middleton. I hope you'll make a charitable contribution to Feed the Hungry. More mouthwatering conversation and fun here on the Food Schmooze. We'll be right back.
Hey, everyone's talking about chicken. Chicken's a popular bird. Anywhere you go, you're bound to find the chicken eat nothing but the bird. We'll be right back.
beans and cornbread had a fight. Beans knocked cornbread out of sight. Cornbread said, "Now that's all right. Meet me on the corner tomorrow night, and I'll be ready. I'll be ready tomorrow night. I'll be ready. I'll be ready tomorrow night. I'll be ready. I'll be ready tomorrow night." Now that's what beans said to cornbread.
Isn't that just the best, the way they're off the note on that? I just love it. I'm Faith Middleton. The Food Schmooze Party here on WNPR is heard Wednesdays at 3 and 9, Saturdays at noon. Join the conversation with us on Facebook. Simply search The Faith Middleton Show. Thanks to our talented crew, senior contributor Chris Prosperi of Metro Beast Restaurant in Simsbury, Connecticut. We had Georgette Farkas with us in New York. Eugene Amatruda, Marion Roy, Alex Province of Hartford, Connecticut, who is our regular contributor, one of our cocktail and wine people. He's just he loves food. And Mark Raymond is here from Frederick Wildman and Sonny's, one of our go-to wine people, and producers Lori Mack and Jonathan McNichol. Here we go. We're going to go into the cocktail zone because we're in this time of year, and I am nuts about watermelon. I know we all love it. And Alex created a watermelon lime cocktail. Tell us about this, Alex.
So I've been lugging around this watermelon the size of a bowling ball with the intent I was going to bore a hole, fill it with vodka.
There you go.
Been bringing it back and forth to the sailboat. Yep. Finally, I was like, you know what? I'm going to turn this into a cocktail. I was too impatient, so I cut it. Took about a cup of watermelon. Yep. This was seedless, but you still get tiny little seeds. I muddled it with the back of a wooden spoon, just sort of crushed it in a Boston mixer glass to get it almost to like a puree consistency. I took a lime. I wanted to give it some freshness, some acidity, and I absolutely love lime and dark and stormies and everything. Mm-hmm. So took maybe a quarter of that, squeezed it, and then started crushing it to get the essential oils.
The whole lime segment?
Yeah, the whole lime, the skin and the pulp and everything.
So you're just mashing it with the back of a spoon.
You can use a muddler, but I think Matt brought it down to the beach. So I just took a wooden spoon and sort of, crushed it. Added about a teaspoon or less of just sugar. I use sugar in the raw, but you can use any kind of sugar just to sort of give it a little bit of sweetness. And once I got the consistency right, like a minute of bashing this stuff, I added a couple shots of vodka and some ice. I shook it. I shook it pretty ferociously because you sort of want to dilute the watermelon so it's not as viscous, so it thins out a little bit. And I actually strained it through like a fine strainer just to get the seeds out. And it made the most delicious vodka martini I've ever had.
Oh.
I took a little lime zest from one of the quarters of lime, and I sort of twist it so it releases its oil. And I took that and I rubbed the rim of the martini glass. Uh-huh. It was so good.
Alex and I love to make cocktails. And so if you're saying this, I am going home tonight and I am making this. This is so – I cannot wait.
I like the idea that there's no – you don't add any fruit juice. There's enough juice coming out of the watermelon to make this great cocktail.
It's simple. It's wholesome. Yeah. It's easy to do. I mean, I would have kept making them last night.
Yeah, I would have
drunk the whole watermelon.
It's like,
watermelon.
What time do I have to wake up? Is the watermelon waiting for you on your counter at home?
I probably.
Yeah.
I was going to say to Lori and Jonathan, we could get anyone to go to any doctor's office for any test, promising them one of these cocktails when you walk in the door. I don't know why people.
Oh, absolutely.
I don't know why they don't try this. It's just anything. Okay, so I'm going to come back to you after Alex Province to get your gazpacho recipe because he's quite famous for his gazpacho. So we're going to, and all of this is at our website right now, foodschmooze.org. But before, and I got a tuna salad recipe, believe it or not, before we get to that, I want to talk to Mark Raymond of Frederick Wildman and Sons because there might be a link here with this cocktail. He has a wonderful Prosecco. Who doesn't love it? It's just this friendly, sparkling white. And this one is from which maker, Mark?
From Lamberti.
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 Lamberti. You'll see it on the website. They go back to the 60s, I think, right?
Yep.
Are they on Lake Garda?
They are, right on the edges of Lake Garda, which is a beautiful place to drink Prosecco.
Yeah. So
Chris and I were talking earlier. This is just the craze right now, Prosecco. And for this time of year, and when you talk about cocktails, you know, there's a lot of people that are taking Prosecco and putting them into cocktails. And I couldn't think of a better way to spritz up that drink that Alex just made with just a touch of this Prosecco.
Would it be fun to try it a second way with a splash of Prosecco? What would you think?
I would put it in a flute. So I would take that mixture, pour it into a flute, and then top it off with the Prosecco. And now it's going to be effervescent, refreshing.
So if you're someone, though, who's just drinking this Lamberti, and this is an affordable one, what price? We're at
$14 a
bottle. I was going to say we're in the $15 price and under category. Yeah. This is a great one to bring to somebody's house. If people are coming over for dinner, this is terrific. And let's describe the kind of floral notes in this Prosecco Lamberti.
Well, to me, when I'm drinking this Lamberti, I get apple, I get pear. It's
peach,
really crisp. There's a little bit of peach note to it.
But not sweet.
It's not sweet. Yeah. You're right. It's really refreshing. And it's not as effervescent as a champagne is. It does have a good amount of carbonation, but it's not overpowering sometimes, like that blast that you get from champagne.
Yeah, this is what I call a softer bubble, a more gentle bubble.
Right.
And, but they use a kind of, at this house, a double fermentation process, I think. And that brings out the aromatic qualities in the grapes.
Right. Right. It just makes it so much more vibrant and lively when in the glass. You get that, you put it to your nose and there's just floral qualities coming out. You pick up that peach and the pear that you had described.
Happy bubbles.
So Lamberti Prosecco on our website right now at foodschmooze.org, along with our recipes. Alex, I'm going to come to you in a second because I know, Chris, you love gazpacho.
Love gazpacho.
Who doesn't?
It's all summer long.
We're going to get to this in just a second. So let me tell you what I'm with my dear friend Ita, who lives in New York City and also part-time on the east end of Long Island. And we were in Orient, and I was about to make tuna salad. And she said, you know, do you ever try tuna salad with avocado, fresh avocado? And I said, you mean on a sandwich? And she said, no, I don't use mayo. I mash a half of an avocado into the can of, and this was an olive oil tuna. And so you just mash it with a fork, and it becomes the binder. You think you're looking at mayonnaise.
Yeah.
It doesn't even look green. I mean, it's kind of a remarkable thing. So then I thought, I love lime on avocado, so I squeezed a little lime juice in it. I looked at it and I thought, you know what? This would be so great with this. And I tasted it and I thought, this is fantastic. A little salt and pepper. Fantastic.
Yeah.
And then I thought, oh, my, what would this be like? And so I just put some curry powder.
Oh, my God.
In a pan. I like to
toast
heat it with
a little
bit of oil. Yeah. Just toast it up a little because it makes it very aromatic. Yeah. And I put that in and stirred it up with a fork. So it was a curried avocado tuna salad.
How easy is it? Like a half an avocado?
Yeah.
Or a whole half?
You could do whatever. Yeah. I did a half.
And
I put a little lime in it.
And just mash it in with the tuna.
It was so delicious. So,
Ita,
you were an inspiration.
Bread.
Or just a baguette.
Oh, yeah.
Or I had a plain with I think I had a corn tortilla on the side just for fun, you know? I toasted it. It was wonderful.
Yeah, and that's my kind of tuna salad. I like the vinaigrette-y ones.
Yeah.
What I do is I take fresh tomato, put it in a blender, and then I just add a little bit of lime juice to it and some olive oil, and I pour that over my tuna salad.
And you will see on the website, I suggest that if you like onion, and I do, you could – so the next time I made this, I put some finely diced red onion in it, and it was, you know, with the curry powder.
That sounds awesome.
And then I have I buy that Patox lime pickle, it's very – you know, you can get it in the hot version.
Yeah.
I do the mild, and I put a little of that on the side and made a sandwich out of it.
That's a meal.
Incredible. Absolutely. Right? Really fun.
A full meal.
Really, really fun. Anyway, on the website, foodschmooze.org. It's the season of tomatoes. Whether you slice them.
Absolutely. Just with a little olive oil, salt, and pepper.
Now, what do you do?
I could just eat them all day.
Do you do the basil and the marsh?
Yeah, I mean, fresh basil is always there in the garden, so that's always nice to have. But I'll tell you, I just love – I almost eat them like an apple sometimes. Just take a little salt, take a bite, and just keep going.
Will your kids eat them that way?
No.
No, no.
Eventually they will.
No.
Everyone gets to the point where they love a tomato.
Oh,
if you don't start off young, it gets to a point when you're a teenager or when you get to an adult, and then the tomato is like – because I was that kid. I did not like tomatoes.
I was the same
way. And then it just like I hit my late teens and it was like a discovery. I'm like, how could I have not liked this?
You know, and there's a restaurant in Paris called Arpège, and I led a food and wine tour with listeners from our station, and we went there. And he's famous for making, obviously tomatoes are a fruit, and he makes in a Florentine style, so back in the 15th century, it has something like 27 herbs and spices in this thing. And I thought, you know, this is exotic before I tasted it and probably a little weird. And I'm going to think this is clever, but not really that delicious. And I almost fell out of my chair. Just amazing. So it goes to show you what you can do with a tomato.
Especially when they're coming right out of this area.
So Alex Province, tell us how you make this famous gazpacho of yours.
So I can't believe I'm telling everyone this, but I grew up with, my mom grew so many tomatoes. We had our back porch, every windowsill in the kitchen.
Oh, as you're finishing ripening, yeah.
Tons of tomatoes. She would make like delicious tomato sauce that was fresh with garlic and olive oil. I mean, so August to me is about tomatoes. But gazpacho, when I was visiting my great uncle in Spain, he would take a wooden bowl that was over 100 years old, and he would actually make gazpacho using a mortar and pestle. He would actually take his jackknife, like all those Southern European guys have their pocket knives, and he would like cut every vegetable in that tiny little pieces and then crush everything and make gazpacho in this bowl. But obviously it would take him like an hour to do, so that's not my gazpacho recipe.
And
but
we have power tools.
Yeah. So my mom calls this liquid health, the recipe I'm going to give you. So basically, and I've worked this out to a science. So
We have this on the website, so you don't have to take this down. This is at foodschmooze.org.
I hope your mom doesn't mind that you're putting this out there.
No, but she'll always compare it to my grandfather. So we come from a long line of these gazpacho makers. But I almost make this every single night in August. It's, like I say, liquid health, as my mom calls it. So take your blender, like a margarita blender, and follow these instructions pretty closely. Because I've varied left to right, so do them sort of like I'm explaining. Take the blender, add one clove of garlic. More will make it too garlicky.
And you don't chop it up, just the
whole
thing.
Add it, pulse it until it disappears. Yeah. Now take your cucumber and you're going to peel it, cut it in half lengthwise, and then into some chunks so that when you put it into the blender and you pulse it, it all sort of again disappears, and you're just pulsing it for seconds.
And you don't have to take the seeds out.
You can if you want.
Doesn't matter.
I like it rustic, so I keep them in. Then take an heirloom tomato or a great ripe tomato, quarter it, put it in, pulse it until it sort of all gets chopped up.
With the skin and everything.
Skin and everything. I don't take the jelly out or the seeds.
Okay.
Now take a green pepper. Get a green pepper that smells like green pepper, not like waxy. You want one that just is ripe and
summer green pepper.
Yeah, real green pepper. Take that, break it into a few pieces, drop it in, pulse it until it disappears. Now you circle back and you can add another heirloom tomato. And depending upon the size, I sort of, at this point, I look at how full my blender is. So I've already added one. I've done, now I'll circle back and add another quartered one and pulse it until now you end up with a blender that's basically just minced vegetables. Now you're going to take sea salt, you put it in. And now you switch the blender to on, and now while it's all blending, it should all be moving smoothly, not stuck at the bottom. You pour for 10 seconds really good extra virgin olive oil, the kind that you could drink out of the bottle. And now what you're doing is you're creating an emulsion. And while this is going, I add 2 or 3 capfuls of red wine vinegar. You know, and you can add more or less depending, but you have to get sort of the acidity right. And if the tomatoes are too ripe, you need more acid, less ripe, less acid. And now after 10 seconds, you have this pink, emulsified, frothy, salty, garlicky gazpacho. Now, if I'm serving it right then, I'll put in a handful of ice and it instantly chills it. And I pulse the ice cubes.
So it gets like little chunky.
Little like a martini.
Yeah.
Pour this into a bowl and you can just drink this for dinner. And
oh my God, I want it now.
Or if you're going to serve it, you know, don't add the ice right away. If you're not going to serve it right away, put it in the refrigerator, cover it, and then, you know, and it'll chill, and then you can serve it.
So simple.
Well, that sounds so good.
No cilantro, no onions.
Can you see him standing in his kitchen with his blender?
No onions, no cilantro.
No,
you know,
I've been told that you salt it to taste, no pepper, just salt.
So I've heard that in Spain they sometimes add mayonnaise to gazpacho. Is that true?
I haven't seen that, and I sort of come from where they make gazpacho. The olive oil emulsifies and creates almost like
I've seen bread in it too. Chopped up dried leftover bread.
My mom will take a baguette and then soak it in water and then to soften it because it's and you take that and then you ream it out to get the excess water out and then you add that to the gazpacho towards the end. You know,
and that helps thicken it, right?
It gives it some texture and it almost it's almost like the juxtaposition of pizza dough to tomato sauce. It has that great flavor. And in the wintertime, which here we don't have fresh tomatoes, but they add potato in place of the
cooked potato?
Cooked potato.
So just again, as that
add
binder.
Some starch to it.
Yeah.
Wow. But you don't have to do the bread. So when I heard you doing it, you didn't do the bread.
I mostly skip the bread. And if I do use a sourdough bread that has something that has flavor, otherwise you're, I mean, what's just the point? Sure. Yeah.
Whoa, that is so fun. You know, it strikes me that with, I mean, I'm ready to stick to your recipe exactly. And that's on our website, foodschmooze.org, along with all the other things that we've been talking about. It strikes me that gazpacho is like, I don't know, something that everybody must have a home recipe for this. The way they, you can add little things to it that.
In Spain, you'll see every house will have a mom that's making, or, you know, dad that's making gazpacho. And everyone sort of has their variation. But essentially, it's the way that I gave it is the core of what the recipe is. And it's in the south of Spain. It's hot in the summertime. You don't have a huge appetite. So you're getting all your nutrition. You're getting a fiber, your salt, your liquid, and you can just gobble this stuff up.
Would they ever put something in it, if you're serving in a bowl, like some cold shrimp?
At a fancy restaurant, you'll do egg. They'll take a hard-boiled egg, sort of chop it. You can garnish it with little bits of onion. And
a classic thing to drink with this would be a very chilled dry white sherry, like from a company.
If you put crab on it,
that's one of my favorite things. Yeah. A little crab meat on the top, this gazpacho, and La Gitana.
Oh, sure.
Dry sherry.
So if I envision being outside with my great uncle outside on the terrace, we'd have this. We'd have bread, tocino, which is like a pork fat that they eat with bread, which sounds weird, but it is so delicious. You're drinking gazpacho, having an icy cold beer, drinking dry sherry like the Gitano, and that with some jamón serrano.
That's just heaven.
Oh, boy.
That's summer eating.
And speaking of Mark.
Who's lining up our tickets to Spain?
And, you know, people do tomato salads. My grandpa always took tomato and then onion, and you would lay them sort of on a bowl, olive oil, and then lots of red wine vinegar, and you let it macerate in the refrigerator for a couple of hours, and then it all sort of softens up, and the juices come out, and it's icy cold. Then you take chunks of bread, and you sort of, you know, family style, squish your bread into it, and the bread just absorbs all the acid tomato juice, and it is heaven.
Almost like a panzanella.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, that's right. All right. We have more things coming your way, because what a season this is. Please support your local food growers and food makers. Are the farmers markets hopping right now? Find the food, wine, and recipes and cocktails that we feature right now online at foodschmooze.org. More delicious conversation after a quick break. Please stay with us.
Thank you. I'm gonna tell my kids a bedtime story, a play without a plot. Will it have a happy ending? Maybe, yeah, maybe not. I tell them life is what you make of it, so beautiful, so what.
Is this unbelievable? Is he unbelievable? Isn't that something?
I want that. Awesome. I want that.
He's just a genius.
Great,
I mean,
voice.
A songwriter, performer, the musicians, the arranging, the unbelievable. I'm Faith Middleton, unless you think maybe not.
What is she talking about?
Why is she imposing her views on us? I'm Faith Middleton with the gang, and this is the Food Schmooze Party coming to you in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the East End of Long Island. You can tweet us at FaithWNPR to join the conversation with us on Facebook. Search The Faith Middleton Show. I am with my buddies Mark Raymond and Chris Prosperi and Alex Province and Jonathan McNichol and Lori Mack, and we love this time of year. Well, you know, I guess here on the Food Schmooze, we always say there's a food season. You know, there's always something going on. It may be the deepest part of winter.
I don't know. There's something about this time of year, isn't it? With all the farmers market. I mean, you don't even have to go to a farm. Or just driving down a road and you pass a farm stand and it catches your eye and you're like, what were all those colors as you drove by, right? The tomatoes, the squash.
I have to say this has been an incredible year for corn.
Oh,
I don't know what the conditions were.
A farmer would be able to tell us. But when it came,
sweet corn this year.
And
there's a ripeness in the air and in the foliage. You know, it just has the light. There's some special thing about this time.
I got a tomato salad for you. And this is a cheater's one because it involves the olive bar at the supermarket.
Wow.
Right? And you get little cherry tomatoes, right? And now you can get – even in the supermarket, you can get a box of them, right? There are green ones and yellow ones and pear-shaped ones and round ones. And so either farmer's market or supermarket, just get
your yard
if you're growing them, right?
Yeah.
Different shapes and sizes of these little tomatoes. Then I go to the olive bar, which it rocks, right? I just love walking around it and seeing all the different things. So get one of those little pint containers and – I filled it about a quarter of the way with the little mozzarella balls, right? Do you know what I'm talking about?
They're really tiny. Yeah.
Then I walked my way around and I found the pickled cherry peppers, not the stuffed ones, but just plain pickled cherry peppers. And then I kept on walking and I found some Kalamata olives, pitted, of course. I'm not pitting olives. And I found some green olives that had some like Herbes de Provence on it, pitted, of course. And then I put my lid on it. And went back and I took those tomatoes, washed them, cut them in half, threw them in a bowl, and then I cut my little mozzarella balls in half, threw those in the bowl. I chopped up the olives. I chopped up the peppers. I threw it all in a bowl, and then I took the largest handful of basil that you could get in one hand, and I just chopped it up roughly, threw that in the bowl, and then really good olive oil, tossed it in there. And then I was like, oh, I should put other stuff in here, and I started thinking about it, and you went to taste it, and you're like, oh, my God. A little sea salt on top, and that
means
was it.
Wow.
Right? So you got that little spark of spice from those pickled cherry peppers. You got a little vinegar from there. You get that salty brininess from the olives. You get the fattiness from the cheese and the olive oil. And
that's a great idea to bring somebody's cookout that, you know, you're going to, and you're like, what am I going to make? Oh, all right, I make a couple quick stops.
Yeah.
I throw it all together. You look like a champ.
That was dinner.
And you look so fancy.
Oh, yeah. Who came up with that? Oh, I just,
threw it together.
I made it up.
But that was dinner with Faith Middleton watermelon salad, because we've been eating that like almost every day now.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
The feta cheese, watermelon, fresh mint.
Yeah.
A little bit of olive oil. And I put a splash of balsamic in it, too, just to give it a little spice.
I want to just give credit where credit
is
due.
Yeah.
Chris is referring to a recipe of mine that was in Food and Wine magazine. And, you know, it looks like I'd made this great recipe. Really, what happened was, we were at Jacques Pepin's, and Food and Wine came, and they said, you know, okay, there's certain recipes of things you were serving we'd like to get. And so they, one of the things they picked was this watermelon and feta salad that I brought. To be fair and give Jacques Pepin all the credit in the world, he said, sure, okay. And then he looked at my, you know, he tasted my, he ate my food. He looked at it and he said, let me just tweak this just a little bit.
Okay, so a compilation between you and Jacques, right? You sort of built it together. And I tell you, it's an amazing salad.
Never hurts to have a world-class chef tweak back, your food
backing
or
up, like, right?
He's if got, you have to, go ahead.
He's got your back. But then then a couple pieces of fish on the grill, that was dinner. Tomato salad,
Chris,
watermelon feta
wonderful.
Salad, a couple pieces of grilled fish, and then...
watermelon and martini.
And oh my gosh, where were you? Where were you?
I'll be there next time.
Or a watermelon Bellini.
Oh, that's right. Right. Made with your Prosecco.
Yeah.
So just watermelon and Prosecco mixed together? Watermelon juice?
Oh, you got to have that spritz of lime, though. That just kind of makes it pop.
I think we're all lime addicts in here. Apparently.
Yeah, I think we are. Yeah.
I get that stuff from Mexico. I bring it back in my suitcase by, like, the box.
I still need
It's called tajin, and it's chili peppers. Lime zest and sea salt.
Yes, it's all dehydrated, so it's like in a shaker. So what about you? Did Lori and Jonathan, did you grow up having – I mean, when I was a kid, we made tomato sandwiches. And later on, I discovered that you could use not just white bread, but you could do buttered toast and these thick sliced tomatoes with a little salt and lots of butter on that toast, on that white toast, by the way. And I had to have these tomato sandwiches. Did you grow up with that? Lori, you're half Italian.
Pumpernickel bread with sliced tomato, butter, and salt and pepper.
Oh, that sounds good.
Now toasted, just plain. Wow. And who are the radish? My radish friends seem to be nuts about radish sandwiches. So sliced radishes on buttered white bread. No toasting. Interesting. And we have watermelon radishes now. This is the thing about the farmers markets.
You have to remember to keep cash in your car so that when you drive by, because I found myself, I stopped to get corn yesterday and I had no money.
You, like, you want to give your license plate number also?
I'll bring it back tomorrow.
I'll be back. So I'm sure the guy's like, okay, see ya.
I do this too. I get on either on a dish or an item. You know, something, a prepared food, and you will just see me in that place over and over and over again. I just get on a run, and it can last a year.
Of the same thing. Yeah. Wow. I shouldn't say that. I've been eating that watermelon salad almost every day now.
You have?
We have it on the menu at the restaurant, so it's very easy to say, hey, you over there, can you make me one?
That's so nice.
The same thing will happen with the gazpacho. As soon as you start making it, you'll get home after work, and you're like, you know what? I think I'll have gazpacho, and it's easy.
You all have your classic gazpacho recipes, and so I wonder, do you then object if you start fooling with them? I think about all the things that you could do with it. I would even, you know, we like, Chris and I are fans of this Palacios dry cured chorizo. Alex would say it a different way because he has true gorgeous accent.
Go ahead.
Chorizo.
Anyway, I would chunk it up and saute it, let that paprika oil come out of it, then just sprinkle some.
And add that paprika oil instead of.
Oh, I don't know.
Remember you have to add the chorizo into the French fries next time.
And what happened?
No, I haven't tried it yet, but that's...
About a little clam juice and some chopped clams, fresh clams?
So when I make it at the restaurant, I do it different every single time.
Oh, you do?
I make gazpacho every single week. I never use a recipe, and I don't want it to be the same. I just, whatever I have. Sometimes I'll put corn in it. Sometimes I'll put bread in it. Sometimes I'll chop the vegetables. Sometimes I'll puree the vegetables.
I like the corn idea.
Am I able to turn my headset off while he's... Blasphemy.
See, I knew it. That's why I didn't mention it earlier, because he's like a traditionalist. But you can. You can put avocado in it. Hold
shrimp.
Your ears.
I love
shrimp, avocado. I mean, just it's pretty much endless. I've never done the chorizo, but I'm totally going to do that now on top.
I've never done it, but it sounds really
sure,
good to
tomato
me.
And
I would even put shrimp and chorizo in together again, and some corn.
And I've used clamato.
Stew, in other words. Yeah.
He's falling down out of his chair.
I don't have one. I might need one.
No, I've used clamato juice instead of tomato juice because it gives
it umami. Chopped cooked clams, fresh
clams. Oh my gosh, yeah.
So use the clamato or whatever when tomatoes aren't so gorgeous as they are right now.
Right.
I mean, do that in the winter. But when you have beautiful tomatoes,
Purist.
Falling off the counters.
Purist. I like to play.
You see, gazpacho is a religious experience.
See, I'm going to put spam in it.
It's
V8. No, he's done. No, I'm kidding. All right. I'm kidding.
And I don't see why Mountain Dew couldn't go in there.
That's exactly right. In all things, yes.
Has anyone gotten to planking the hot dogs yet?
No, but that's what we have to try.
Planking the hot dogs?
You know me and
how does that work? Sounds,
well, we plank the salmon. So
yeah, but you know what? I went back and everyone has been teaching me how to plank, right? Because remember, my planks, they
catch on fire.
And you're out there saying, wow, I've done three different on this. And I'm thinking, wow, you can use the same plank more than once? Yeah. So before I put something greasy like a hot dog on a plank, I have to get down the fire.
Don't we want the hot dog to be caramelized? It doesn't get caramelized.
No, it gets orangey and smoky and delicious. But every time I hear planking, I think of my trainer now. Like, I plank at the end of my workout. And I'd rather have the salmon plank.
Do you tell him that? It's like planking. Now I'm going home and eating after this workout.
So the hot dogs get smoky and orange and gorgeous, but we have to try it.
All right, Faith, you're the planker who's been, I think out of all of us, you're successful at the, you use the same plank more than once.
Why do I have that? Because how I would like to assume that mantle, but I can't say that I have any special ability.
It's just soaking in water, isn't it?
I soak it in some water, and that's the end of it.
Or wine.
I put mine in the oven. That's the thing.
You're not doing
it. I do it in the oven. I don't go near the fire.
Well, there could be, you know, but it'd be bad.
I mean, unless I've done it on top of the grate, but I don't stick it right in the fire the way you do because it's wood.
See, this is, but I've seen, but I, no one told me when they said about planking that it shouldn't catch on fire. I thought that was part of
it.
And I had to use one piece of salmon, one plank.
So I actually took my plank and after doing the salmon with the brown sugar, there was some like caramelized burnt sugar on it. Mm-hmm. I put the plank in the dishwasher. And it came out clean.
Again, you've used the same plank twice, and now you're
washing it. No, I've used the same plank like four or five times.
And you've washed it.
I tried this with my bamboo cutting board, and it now it looks like a curved television set. Okay, that was not
a good idea.
I thought, I'm going to sterilize it.
Yeah. Well, maybe put it back in, it'll bend the other way. Straighten out.
Really, I should put that as a tip on our website. Do not put your bamboo cutting board in the dishwasher.
So I need some fire building tips.
You know what? I got to have you over. We can just show you how to do the wood fire.
Yeah, because mine usually involves gasoline, twigs, and newspaper.
No gasoline. No accelerants.
You use a little bit of newspaper. You get the small branches and the small pieces of wood going, and then you put the bigger pieces on. Yeah. And you, again, like we've talked about previously, you cook over the coals, never cook over the flame.
So
the thing about the fire that I like that Mark's saying is that the temperature gets raised at every point. So the newspaper is one little tiny temperature, and then the twigs start to catch fire, and that's a slightly higher temperature, and then that's strong enough for once you put the logs on, the larger pieces of wood, for that to catch. Right?
Start with your kindling and you get some good flame going with wood, and then you get the bigger pieces on and you make your big fire. And as that burns down, the big piece is what you want to get to, the coals of the big piece. And then you just want to keep a little piece of the fire going the whole time, so you keep stoking it with other pieces.
Off to the side.
And then you pull the coals over to where you want to cook.
I mean, you can learn it pretty fast.
Yeah. But there is a skill and an art to this kind of fire.
Absolutely.
There's an incredible skill to grilling.
And it's time-consuming, too. It's not like, okay, you turn on the gas and
how about
you
any
have
kind
it.
Of grilling? It's a whole other thing. It's not like stovetop cooking. I mean, my hat is off to people who are really great grillers because it's a whole thing you have to learn. I had a ball with all of you and our guests. The Food Schmooze on WNPR airs Wednesdays at 3 and 9, Saturdays at noon. We are online right now, and anytime you can find the recipes, food products, restaurants, value wines, easy cocktails at foodschmooze.org right now. Here's to pleasure, my friends, and remember, never eat more than you can lift. In New Haven, I'm Faith Middleton.
Everybody eats when they come to mind.